Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, we're going to be talking about North Carolina voting bullshit. It's a really bad, really scary story. We're also going to be talking about Andrew Cuomo, and I hate stories where Democrats are the shitty assholes, but they do happen. This is like, being a dickwad is not a partisan issue. I feel like everyone needs to remember that. And then we're also going to talk about Obama talking about how Trump claims that this booming economy is all because of him and why that's not really the case. So, packed show. We're also recording on a Monday night for a couple of reasons. First of which, Varsha has school and she teaches on Monday, so we can't record during the day on Monday, and Sunday nights are usually fine, but last night was Rosh Hashanah, and so I was at Rosh Hashanah services until late last night, so we weren't able to record. And of course, I sound like shit because I'm sick and losing my voice and trying to host and produce three shows right now, and I feel like my lung's going to fall out. Yeah. So,
but Devin promises me she has lots of soup. You have lots of soup,
I have
right?
so much soup.
Okay,
I
good.
Have so much soup. I ordered my favorite smashed pea soup from California Pizza Kitchen on Moss, so I'll be eating a lot of it.
Good.
Now that Hellbent Media is producing two new shows, I realize that I need some help. I got really lucky with Varsha. She fell right into my lap. But now that I'm looking for someone else, I need to be smart about who I find them. That is why I'm turning to ZipRecruiter. And you know what's not smart? Letting your friends pick your karaoke song, especially if you're me, because I'm terrible at karaoke. Or just hoping that another Varsha falls into my lap to help me with all the editing I have to do. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. And right now, Hellions can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. That's ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/hellbent. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, Varsha, so what's going on in North Carolina with voting records? It has something to do with ICE.
Federal prosecutors in the Eastern District of North Carolina, they were working with ICE, and they subpoenaed the state and 44 counties last Friday. They basically were seeking estimated of like in the numbers of like 20 million documents. And these subpoenas included at least 5 years of ballots, 8 years of voter registration applications and provisional voting forms and absentee request forms, voter registration cancellations. And finally, any and all inquiries sent to voters asking them to confirm their citizenship. Again, so like on the surface, this seems like very normal, blah, blah, blah. But in the context of this administration and the fact that they're working with ICE.
But wait, but is it normal?
No,
I mean, is this something that, I mean, I don't even think you could say that this is something that happens in other administrations, like a routine audit. This doesn't sound like a routine fucking audit.
I was just trying to be nice. It's not normal. It just feels really weird. Basically, the reasoning was that critics were basically saying that like, this is like we have to not critics, sorry, but like the reasoning behind this was basically that they have to basically audit all of this and figure out if, you know, it basically seeks documents that would disclose very confidential information. But they were doing it because they want to make sure their people are following proper voting laws, apparently.
So this is about sussing out these quote unquote 3 million people who voted illegally. That's what this is about at its core.
Basically, that is what they're saying. Like that they're not saying, sorry, that's not what they're saying, but it's fair to assume that's what they're doing.
But it's also, but if they're asking, if this is coming from ICE and they're asking for this sort of very sensitive data, I mean, are they trying to find, are there dual purposes here? I'm very like, I know you don't have answers. I'm more just like, very like taken aback by this entire story.
Basically, it just requires everything from January 2010 to August 30th, 2018. And basically, it's almost like 20 million documents. And originally, the dates for producing the documents was September 25th. But like, that's just so fast to get all these documents. And Sebastian Kilmanovich, is the assistant U.S. attorney for the Eastern District in North Carolina. And basically he said like, oh, don't worry, I'll push the deadline. As long as you give us the documents, it'll be fine. But there's no real indication as to like what they actually want or what they need or what the investigation is about. The district attorney and the attorney general in North Carolina is authorized to fight this. And basically what they're saying is this is invasive information. According to the attorney general, Josh Stein, he said the subpoena we've received was and remains overly broad, unreasonable, vague, and clearly impacts the significant interests of our voters. What he calls it is an attempt to obtain records and documents that violate the principles of overreach by the federal government, as in this circumstance. And this is like North Carolina they're doing this in, which it makes a little bit of sense to me, because North Carolina does have a Democratic governor now, but it went for Trump, right? It's interesting that they're starting there. It basically, the subpoena came right after ICE confirmed that 19 foreign nationals had been indicted at the end of August for illegally voting in North Carolina's 2016 election cycle, right?
Okay, so this was actually a story that we didn't cover a couple of weeks ago, though. Like, okay, there were 19 cases of voter fraud.
Yeah, 19 out of like millions and millions of people who live in America, mind you. And so like, that's the reason I'm happy that we didn't talk about it, because I was just like, from what it tells, like they clearly just voted illegally and they're being like fined or whatever. I don't think they're like, I don't know at this point if they're going to be sentenced to prison, but I do know they have like very hefty fines based on the ICE website. And they're very proud of this because the headline says 19 foreign nationals indicted for illegally voting in 2016 elections. And again, like good for them for finding people who voted illegally, but clearly they're using these 19 voters to then subpoena like millions of documents to fish for more voters who may have voted illegally. Or maybe for discrepancies, or maybe to find a way to help GOP consultants or whoever has this kind of data eventually, because I don't know who's going to be leaking in ICE to like suppress the vote in future elections. Also, when you're asking about questions of citizenship, like that could fuck over families who have like one person who's undocumented, but other people who are citizens in the household, right? This is like the census 2020 all over again, where asking a citizenship question is bad. And so you better bet there are people who are from immigrant families in North Carolina are paying attention to stuff that's happening in their state. And this is one thing that's happening in their state that could affect how they feel secure in their state.
Well, I mean, this also goes back. I was going to say, there is like a whiff of who has access to this data. I mean, I understand that it's one governmental department subpoenaing a state record. But at the same time, Cambridge Analytica, that was Facebook. So that wasn't a governmental agency, obviously. But obviously, getting your hands on this type of data is not that difficult if you know where to go. And so having this extremely sensitive data, and that's being sought out in such an odd way, right? I feel like ICE subpoenaing these records is completely out of left field. Like, what are they even
also
doing?
What's weird about this is like the attorney general was like, I'm willing to send these documents to you if actual vote information within these documents is redacted, because basically if right. I was living in North Carolina, this information about my voter file would have, Barsha voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. She's a registered Democrat. She voted for X person for governor and X person for congressperson, blah, 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 blah. Right. And it could also have my address and my phone number, but essentially it would have who I voted for, right? And again, it's a fucked up thing to give to ICE. The Justice Department and ICE literally haven't told Stein, at least he's admitted that he doesn't know why ICE wants the voting information. He has no idea. There is no transparency here. That is what I'm gleaning from this story, because it's very confusing as to why they sought these documents in the first place. Besides the fact that they are engaged in like an investigation because they found 19 people who voted illegally.
So if all this is predicated on sussing out illegal voting, we're talking about 19 people out of 137.5 million people who voted in the 2016 election. I mean, really think about that. I say the word statistically insignificant all the time on this show, and it getting to the point where it's being annoying, but come the fuck on. But the thing is like, Varsha, you make an excellent point that this isn't just about this one investigation into whether 19 people voted illegally or not, but it's about making people feel unsafe to vote and to feel like if they even register to vote, that then their data will be subject to inquiries and that their data can be misused.
Or that like if you make a mistake, like the government is after you, right? Like even though you're a citizen or whatever, right? It just doesn't make it seem as if the Republican Party actually wants people to vote. And like that's not a good thing for the government to like be doing, like no matter what your party. But obviously like That's what the GOP's platform is based on.
But I think you're right. I think ultimately the goal of this is going to be voter suppression of some kind. I mean, I just can't believe that in the year 2018, I mean, we're talking about subpoenaing personally identifying information from voter registration cards. I mean, that is just
it
next
is,
level
and
bananas.
I just realized why it was weird for me not to like see the reason why the Justice Department or ICE had a like had a reason for the subpoenas. It's because I went to the original story. They declined to comment on the matter. There literally is no reason. It's shrouded in mystery, according to the New York Times, which is a great turn of phrase. Not a great turn of phrase to describe how the government works, of course.
And that's just not how this works, shrouded in mystery. That's just not how this works, period. I mean, again, we can go on and on about the hypocrisy here, but the absolute lack of transparency and the manipulation to do things like suppress the vote. And the other thing, like, again, the Justice Department and ICE are in this together. They are obviously after a particular demographic of voters, which would be people of color. It's not white voters they're trying to suppress.
It's people of color. And so that's why I think it's interesting they did this in North Carolina. Like, I understand that these people who are allegedly caught voting illegally were in North Carolina, but I think it's interesting that the DOJ and ICE just pounced on this opportunity to get these voting records from North Carolina, because that is where a shit ton of voter suppression is happening. Literally, they have a system of a state voter identification law. A federal appeals court said this law is targeting African-American voters with almost surgical-like precision. It's not a good thing to like have a court, an impartial federal appeals court, tell you, hey, you're being too racist, even for North Carolina. We're at like the tail end of 2018. This is no longer the moment where you can give stuff the benefit of the doubt. And this is not like good news. Like, I don't think like ICE is like trying to get your voting records because la-di-da, they just want to make sure everybody's secure and everyone can vote and no one's breaking the law. No, there's some other plan here. And even if it's not like fleshed out yet, the fact that they even want to see these records that are unredacted so far is bananas.
Okay, Varsha, so I want to talk about Andrew Cuomo and what the fuck is going on in New York. So there is a primary in New York on September 13th. And so this story is kind of in the run up to that. So what is going on?
Yeah. So basically, this New York State Democratic Committee, which is basically controlled by the governor, Andrew Cuomo, sent out a flyer which falsely claimed that Nixon supported the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, which basically aims to pressure Israel against its policies and treatment of Palestinians. And there are reasons for and against supporting BDS, not the topic of discussion here. It also accused her of being silent on the rise of anti-Semitism in New York, which is profoundly fucked up. It is like Trump campaign tactics level fucked up. It is the Republicans sending out MS-13 ads fucked up, right? Cuomo like tried to distance himself by saying it was wrong and like I didn't know about it. But there's just been a pattern throughout this whole campaign of Cuomo like fundamentally disrespecting Cynthia Nixon as a serious candidate. And I understand that people who are Democrats, Republicans and alike or whatever are saying Cynthia Nixon is similar to Donald Trump. She doesn't have government experience. Why is she running? Blah, 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 blah. Right. But there's a way to do that without being a sexist asshole. And I think Andrew Cuomo and I think a few people in New York politics are guilty of being sexist and guilty of being stupid in how they are fighting against Nixon. Like, if you really think Nixon doesn't have the experience, if you really think her ideas are bad, just say her ideas are bad. Explain your policies over the past 8 years. Explain your goals. Explain why you've been a good governor. Don't even talk about her if you think she is not a qualified candidate, right? If you really think that. But the fact that they are literally using ads that are false and also making it harder for actual anti-Semitism, actual Jewish people in New York to talk against anti-Semitism is disgusting. Basically, it went on to say that like Nixon was against funding yeshivas, supported BDS, the racist xenophobic campaign to boycott Israel, and silent on the rise of anti-Semitism. So I'm not like really well-versed in New York Jewish politics and what's going on in the Jewish community in New York, but obviously there is a rise of anti-Semitism across the country. And it's creating tensions in people who support BDS and don't. But I think from what I've read about Cynthia Nixon, she's actually been really pretty clear on supporting the Jewish community in New York, and also really clear in supporting other communities in New York. Like, there's nothing like, at this point, there's nothing like, nothing in this flyer is correct. And so that's why I thought it was messed up.
Well, that's what it really gets at, though, here. And I think this is something where I am not saying that the Democratic and Republican parties are the same. That is not true. Yeah. That is not the case. But I do think that we tend to forget that regardless of party, the type of scramble that politicians, particularly white male politicians, will go for to hold their power is across the board disgusting. And we like to think of Democrats as somehow not engaging in some of the dirtier parts of politics. And in a lot of ways we are. We don't pull the same shit that Republicans do, and we don't go out to suppress the vote. We don't do a lot. But when it comes to stuff like this, like, assholes are assholes. And I like to say all the time, like in my own life, assholes come in every color, gender, age. They come in every package. This isn't a party issue. This isn't a partisan issue. This is just a fear of this old white guy losing power. I'm not a huge Cynthia Nixon fan. I don't live in New York, so I don't have an official opinion on it. But I just think that it really speaks to a deeper problem that we have in American politics.
Yeah, and I think if you don't like people out there who are like, oh, there was like a lot of mistakes in the 2016 primary, blah, 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 blah. And like whatever the arguments you have for or against whatever side, I don't really care, right? The one thing you can say about both campaigns is that they resorted to personal attacks at times, which were not smart, right? There were times where Bernie Sanders were just like, oh, Hillary Clinton is corrupt for making speeches at Goldman Sachs. And then there was another like, there was a Facebook post that Hillary Clinton made. It was like, where was her Bernie Sanders during the healthcare fight in the 1990s? And he was like, I was right behind you, right? And so like, there are like personal attacks that are just dumb, right? And this is one of them. But the reason that this is like worse than just dumb is that it is exploiting people's real fears in New York, real and valid fears, right? This is the reason this is different from the Republican Party is that the Republican Party is like, is racist and exploiting like racist fears that people have against immigrants and African-American people and et cetera. But this is exploiting a real fear of a really strong constituency in New York against a fellow Democrat. It's also false.
Yeah, scorched earth politics is not a good look on anyone. So, Varsha, I heard you got new sheets.
I did. I got new Brooklinen sheets. And I didn't just get sheets, okay? I got pillowcases and a duvet cover. And I also, like, not just do I have, like, new sheets, I also have a top sheet. And so, like, my bed is very comfy right now.
You are very fancy right now.
It's very fancy.
Especially considering that you're still technically a college student. I know you're getting your PhD, but I can still make fun of you for still being in college.
I'm still technically in college, yeah. And so basically, like, I used to use, my mom used to, like, use a top sheet and, like, a duvet cover when I was, like, living with my parents. But since I got to college, this is like what, 2012? I haven't used any of that. I run really hot, right? And so I need a fan on all times, even if it's like 10 degrees Fahrenheit outside. I will need a fan. But these sheets are so cooling. Have you felt that too?
Yes, I absolutely love them. And they are so comfy and so easy. I mean, I love sheets. I love being comfy like that. And it came in this great little set. The price is right. And you really get that luxury feeling without the luxury markup, which I think is the best part about these sheets.
Yeah, that is so true. I mean, I have never felt a duvet cover this soft.
So, I mean, these are the most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. You should see the text messages that Varsha has sent me. They border on pornographic. But Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for Hellions. So you can get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code Hellbent at Brooklinen.com. And Brooklinen is so sure that you're going to love your sheets like Varsha does that they offer a 60-day risk-free satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty. So for me, I like if you rip them, if anything happens to them, they will replace them.
If you are horrible at laundry because you're a college student like me, and you never did laundry when you were in high school, you have a lifetime guarantee. So nothing to lose.
Wash your sheets without fear. So the only way that you can get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code hellbent at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code hellbent. Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever. So, Varsha, last but not least, I want to talk about Obama. He came out and has started to campaign for the midterm elections, and he has had a lot to say, especially after his relative silence over the last 20 months or so. But there was a particular story about him talking about the economy, because Trump loves to talk about the economy. Not enough. He can't just like take a win. He has to somehow fuck it up. But he really credits himself, and a lot of Republicans, a lot of rank and file Republicans or Republican voters credit Trump with an improved economy. So Obama basically came in and was like, no. He said, quote, "When you hear how great the economy is doing right now, let's just remember when this recovery started. When you hear about this economic miracle that's been going on, when the job numbers come out, monthly job numbers, suddenly Republicans are saying it's a miracle. I have to kind of remind them, actually, those job numbers are the same as they were in 2015 and 2016.
The reason this story pissed me off is because Trump obviously has the thinnest skin. And he responded, he's trying to take credit for this incredible thing that's happening, Mr. Trump told supporters when he was talking in North Dakota. And then he was like, it wasn't him. And then he added that like Obama's recovery was like the weakest in history. Well, like, yeah, like you're comparing it to like the Great Depression, and you're comparing it to other recoveries, which they went by a lot faster, right? And so like, obviously the recovery took a long fucking time because one, you were dealing with obstruction from Republicans, and two, it was like a really shitty recession. It was like one of the shittiest recessions we have had. It was shittier than other recessions we've had in the second half of the 20th century. So the notion that Obama should have been able to fix it as soon as he got elected president in 2008 is bullshit. He literally, as people might have forgotten, because like I was like 11 at the time, right? So like the financial crisis, it was a big fucking deal, but also it came right at the moment of Obama's election, right? He didn't cause it. He won because it was basically clear that McCain could not have handled this type of recovery. The American people said, no, we want Obama to handle this recovery because Bush fucked it up and we're not going to give it to another Republican again, right? But just some facts about Trump's economy. In the 19 months since Trump's inauguration, that's January 2017, the economy has created 3.58 million new jobs. Pretty great, right? But it's still less than the 3.96 million jobs created in the last months of Mr. Obama's presidency. So it's still less than the 3.96 million jobs created in the last 19 months of Obama's presidency. So that is a pretty like compelling like comparison to look at the first months of Trump's inauguration right as Obama's leaving and look at Obama's last 19 months, because in Obama's last 19 months, the recovery is well underway and this is how much he's creating. And then Trump gets elected and this is how much he's creating, right? So clearly what this tells about the economy regardless of like partisanship or whatever, is that like the recovery is slow and steady. It's still going, and like there's been a dip, but it's just still going. We're just continuing to grow. Trump has done nothing to contribute to this 3.58 million new jobs. What he has done is pass a $1 trillion tax cut and deregulated a bunch of shit. But that's not like, that is not stimulating to the degree that you would get 3.5 million jobs, nor to the degree that you can actually reach the 3.96 that Obama was creating. So something is not correct. You know, something is not right here, right? So you can't just say that because Trump has inherited Obama's economy, he's doing exactly the same and everything's fine and blah, 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 blah. Nor can you say Trump should get credit for what Obama did over 8 years. That's BS.
Well, you know, it was also really interesting about this. I think that this is at the heart something that I've thought a lot about since Trump's election. You know, you mentioned this tax cut. So not only is the recovery not Trump's doing, because an economy is never solely based on a president. whether it's a great president or a Trump president. It's always based on a number of factors,
yes.
Many of which are outside of an administration's control. And I can admit that. But one thing I've been thinking a lot about is, especially with these tax cuts, last night I was at Rosh Hashanah services, and then there's a big family dinner. And I was talking to my mother-in-law, who voted for Trump. And, you know, she was saying, well, you know, I taxes, right? That's why I voted for Trump, because of taxes. And this entire taxes and economy line of reasoning for voting for Trump has just led me to one question that I asked my mother-in-law last night, because we were talking about Kavanaugh, and another one of my in-laws said that I was overreacting about Kavanaugh and that Roe v. Wade would never be dismantled.
Oh, this is hard.
And Kavanaugh said just recently that he wouldn't overturn Roe v. Wade.
He
and
lied.
So he said it. So of course we believe
it
him.
It was a lie.
So, but I asked my mother-in-law, I was like, how much money are women's rights to their own bodies worth? And she, to her credit, was shamed. You know, she sat there and she was like, well, you're right. And I'm like, yes, I know I'm right. But at the same time, I was like, but this, we knew this was on the ballot. And she tried to tell me, oh, well, politicians say things all the time that they're gonna promise the world and then they don't do any of it. I'm like, but that's not what this is. Because this was never about Trump promising the world. And if you assumed that he wasn't going to deliver anyway, why vote for him? And so ultimately, when we talk about the economy, and what I found really interesting about this story and about Obama reminding everybody that, you know, this growth, this recovery started a long time ago and is really just part of this larger pattern of growth, and that no president really has complete control over the economy. We just have to remember that enough people, I mean, really, it was 77,000 people over three Midwestern states that elected Trump because of the Electoral College. But regardless of what it was, enough people voted for Trump and enough people took that argument and they said, well, even though we know what's on the ballot, even though we know that this is a possibility, it's more worth my money than your rights. And we have, as a country, it's one of the darkest things, I think, about this entire presidency and this entire era. The absolute darkest thing is that we knew that this is where immigration policy was going to go. I mean, no one could think it would have gotten this bad, but we knew it was going to be bad. But I think the second darkest thing is that even though we know the economic anxiety sort of theory is bullshit and that it was about white supremacy and, you know, white privilege, and we understand that, but that we traded that. We traded that for people's lives and people's well-being. And I think to me that that's why this story in particular has kind of stuck in my craw in a way.
Yeah.
Because if Trump wants to take credit for a booming economy, I'm not even here to take that from him. I mean, Obama's right, and it's not Trump's, and it's not hit the work that he's done or anything about him. But if he wants to take that, fine. But he also then needs to own the fact that it came at much too high a cost.
And I just want to point out that, like, a Harvard economist, the chairman of Bush's Council of Economic Advisors, George Mankiw, was like, he said in this article, I can say the economy was in fine shape at the end of the Obama presidency, despite what Trump sometimes asserts. That then he says the tax cuts likely made it stronger, but while worsening the long-term fiscal imbalance. Reasonable economists can and do disagree about how much impact the tax plan has actually had. So basically, multiple things are happening here, right? So when Donald Trump says, this is the best economy ever, I've done so much, we passed the biggest tax cut in history, none of those things are true. He is technically right that the economy is doing well. But as a Democrat, you have to complicate that and say, who is it doing well for? Is it doing well for people who trade stocks? Is it doing well for the CEOs? Awesome, right? who was it doing well for at the end of the Obama presidency? It was still doing well for the same people, maybe just a little bit more equal, just a teeny tiny bit, right? Same thing about growth. You can say like the Obama economy at the end of his presidency was growing along fine. And you can say this is growing a little bit faster because they literally injected $1 trillion into the economy, but only to rich people. So technically, it's growing a little bit faster. Technically, it's a little bit stronger. But long term, this is a huge fuck up, right? At the very least, what you can say is this is going to play a big role in our next recession. Just as the Bush tax cuts played in our last recession. The Bush tax cuts weren't right. The defining feature of our last election, but they didn't help and they didn't create like a balance in our economy. And so this tax cut isn't like a good thing for the long term. Like you can say, and the most cynical like Republican will probably say this, if you get them down to like to just telling you the truth and just insist that it's not on the record, they will say, yeah, we just did this to look good for a couple of years so we can win the midterms and win in 2020. They have no long-term plan. And so this is like a theme of like the overall show or like the overall hellbent in general is that Republicans have no fucking long-term plan. They don't have a long-term plan when it comes to immigration, when it comes to women's rights, when it comes to anything. They just use resentment politics on a daily basis and short-term solutions based on their messed up obsession with the market to argue that what they're doing is better than what Obama did. And then finally, to add salt to the wound, they just gaslight you into thinking the past 8 years of your life didn't happen. And that's what's just so messed up with the story. But it was good to see Obama talk. He was hilarious. He told this funny story about like getting kicked out of Disneyland for smoking. And I was just like, I love that Obama is in like the I don't give a fuck phase. I love that. Right. I love that.
Zero fucks Obama is
it's,
the world's
it's like
best
Kaftan
Obama.
Hillary, but like a little bit like it's like that. And it's the best. It is. It's like that. And I love it. Okay, Devin, what are you grateful for this week?
All right. I am grateful for Cory Booker. So here's the thing. I said last week on the show when we were talking about Kavanaugh that this is the time to leave it on the court. To torture a sports metaphor. No, I said that this was the moment where what I'm asking of my Democratic leaders is for bravery and for them to do everything in their power to end this. And Cory Booker did exactly that. He released some documents that were marked classified. And let's remember too that these Kavanaugh documents are being gone through and they are being marked classified by Kavanaugh's friend and someone he worked with in the Bush administration.
Exactly.
So this is not exactly like this is not objective. This is just some.
This is not like national security level markup. This is just like, I'm going to call this confidential because it maybe looks bad.
Right. There's literally no reason for these documents to be marked confidential. There is no national security risk. There's no personal information. There's nothing. So Cory Booker went and released a whole bunch of emails about Kavanaugh's stances on abortion. Oh, I'm sorry, about affirmative action and racial policies. So, and then Cornyn, who is the chair of the judicial committee, said this could bring charges and possible expulsion from the Senate. And Cory Booker said, bring it on, bring the charges. Basically doing exactly what I wanted him and every other Democratic senator to do. He is putting his career, his livelihood on the line because this is the moment. This is when it's important. And I was begging for it when we talked on, I believe it was Monday, and then he did it. And I am just so grateful that I am of the party that has leaders like this, that has Cory Booker, that he is more worried about Kavanaugh getting confirmed than he is about his own career. So, you know, especially after speaking with one of my in-laws who doesn't think that Roe v. Wade will ever be overturned because that could never happen. It was amazing to see this man just stand up and say, you know what? Fuck you. Fuck your policy. This is what's right. And I'm not walking away. I am not backing down. And that it makes me proud to be a Democrat. All right, Varsha, what are you grateful for?
I am grateful for my students. So like I'm teaching.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So I'm teaching two sections of US history and they're just like the nicest students and they're just really hardworking. They're really dedicated. And like no one I think very few people in either of my classes are actually history majors. They're taking this because it's like, it's probably a requirement, right? But they're still like doing all the reading, doing the work, having good opinions in class. And also like their first papers are due this week and I have to grade them all. But obviously because it's a lot of students' first papers ever since high school, I'm like, I'm offering to like read their intro paragraphs and their outlines, and they're coming in with like such great paper ideas, and I'm so happy. And I think the reason I'm really grateful for it is like talking about the stuff that we were talking about today. We were talking about evangelical Christianity in the early 18th century in the colonies. We're talking about like the Great Awakening and stuff like that, and they have just such good insights into like the texts that we were reading, the primary sources. But also it got me like re-excited into like why I like history in the first place. It was just, it's so much fun. And so I love teaching and I'm just so happy I'm doing it. It is a bright light this semester. Like doing this podcast and teaching is a bright light this semester with all the other shit that I have to do.
I love that so much. I love that you love teaching. Okay, Varsha, I have to make a confession to you right now.
Okay.
So when I was in college, I was taking this class and it was definitely required. Like it was a requirement and whatever. And I went to my section and we were having this big discussion on the reading that we were supposed to do. And I didn't do it. And I was, you know, and I was usually good about doing the reading, but I'm also, you know, a pretty good bullshitter. So we start talking and the TA looks me like dead ass in the eyes and was like, "Did you do the reading?" And I was like, he's like, "You didn't do the reading." And I was like, "No." He's like, "Get the fuck out." He literally said, "Get the fuck out."
That's so mean.
I got thrown out of a section for not doing the reading, which was probably fair. But I just, now that you're a teacher and like I was one of those shitty students, like I feel like I had to like confess that sin to you.
I mean, like I've done that too. There are times where like I've only skimmed the readings. I just like, it's so hard for me to avoid doing the reading. I'll do like the bare minimum required. If I'm having a really bad day, like, but I still like do it. Right. And I think that's what's so great about these students is like, even though none of them are like history majors, and even if they are, they probably have other stuff going on. They're doing like the bare minimum and sometimes way more above that. And that's just, it feels good. Right. And like, obviously not everyone is talking all the time. They're not like crazy engaged. They're not like the most amazing people ever. And they're all going to become historians, but they're good students. And It's fun.
Wait, didn't you also assign their first paper was like a 5-page paper and they're all freaking out about it?
Yes. So
cute. So cute.
I remember I took the exact, like, I don't know if people know this, but I took the exact same class with the same professor when I was a freshman at the same university. So I know about this class and I remember being so freaked out having to write a 5-page paper. And so like I've just been like, come to my office hours, make separate appointments because I understand how freaked out you are. And so I was like, I'm not going to be like a hard ass on this. I will like help you through this if you haven't written before. Because like I think the worst part about like writing a shitty paper is not even just like the grade. It's just like, because when you're in college, you're just like, I just paid for this class basically. I'm wasting so many, I'm not wasting, but I'm spending so much time invested in this class. And if I had just spent like one more hour, I would have like one grade higher, right? Right. And it's just sometimes it's hard to find the motivation to spend that one extra hour like really editing your paper or really writing a paper. And these students, I feel like because the class is so exciting and because even though they're not history majors, they're invested in it, they're going to be spending that a little bit extra time. And it just makes the class a lot better because people are actually having good discussions. So it's fun. I like my students. They're nice.
Hellions, I'm also grateful for underwear. I record most of these shows in my underwear. And that means I need really great underwear. And for me, I've found that underwear with Tommy John. And the reason, to put it simply, Tommy John doesn't give an F. They give 3 Fs: fabric, fit, and function. Tommy John obsesses over every little detail and stitch by using proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you have ever worn before. It's so true. It is so soft and really good for sitting on your butt all day, which is what I do. As a result, Tommy John's men and women's underwear sport a no wedgie guarantee, comfortable stay-put waistbands, and a range of fabrics that are luxuriously soft, feather light, moisture wicking, breathable, and designed to move with you, not against you. There's no bunching and there's no riding up. Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. That includes their new life-changing women's underwear. It's seriously life-changing. I stand for this underwear, y'all. It sold out in just 6 weeks and it's now fully back in stock. So give three Fs about your underwear and upgrade with Tommy John today. Hurry to TommyJohn.com/hellbent for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/hellbent for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/hellbent. Your butt will thank you. Okay, Varsha, I made a joke about this last week, and I'm going to make the same joke this week because I think it's hilarious and amazing, but you always are so amped on the dick one of the week. You always like send me like text messages about it, and you're like, this guy's the fucking worst. And so I'm like, all right, I'm just going to give you the section. So this week we have a noted dickwad here. So Varsha, who is the dickwad of the week and why? Go.
Okay, dickwad of the week is Carlos Ramos. If you don't know who this person is, let's set the scene. We're at the U.S. Open. We're at the finale. We're at the final match. It is against Naomi Osaka, a 20-year-old tennis player born in Japan, but moved to the United States at age 3. And she admires her opponent, Serena Williams, who's 37 has been playing since Osaka was 3 years old, right? She's been playing for a long ass time. She's been playing, I think, even before Osaka was probably born. Serena Williams has been playing tennis. And she gets to play her hero. And I've been watching Serena Williams since I was a kid, literally since I was like 4 or 5 years old. I can remember watching Serena versus Venus Williams matches when they're both in the final and you're like, which sister is going to win, right? And so obviously Serena being the best athlete in the fucking world, she makes it to the US Open final. And the issue came in the second set. Basically, Carlos Ramos is a really strict chair umpire. And he called, for the first fucking time, a code violation to Serena for coaching, which basically is like a formal violation. And basically, what the coaching violation means is you looked at your coach and your coach like coached you during the match. That's illegal.
Right.
First stupid thing he did. Okay? Because it like was stupid. And even if she actually did it or the coach actually coached her, no man has gotten like violations like this in the final like match of a US Open, let alone any other Grand Slam. Then Serena Williams, like, because she's correct, is like, goes up to him, approaches the chair and says, one thing I've never done is cheat ever. If he gives me a thumbs up, he's telling me to like, come on, give me a thumbs up. And she says, I don't cheat to win. I'd rather lose. I'm just letting you know. And then she like returned to the match, right? And then like, sorry. And then in the second set keeps going on and Williams basically like throws her racket down because she loses a point. And it's like a turning point. And like tennis is not very complicated, but like there are points where like if you lose a point, like it's really difficult for you to like get the advantage again. You're fucked, right? And so she gets angry. And then fucking Carlos Ramos gives her a code violation for racket abuse and a point penalty. Again, really unheard of, because I will direct you to a thread later on in this rant where this same fucking umpire does not do the same thing to other male players who have pulled the same shit, right? Like, it's so frustrating. And then he gives her finally a game penalty, which literally just fucks her up. And she's like, you owe me an apology. And she grows angry and she's frustrated and he doesn't give her an apology and he's just fucked up. And the reason that I think Carlos Ramos is the dickwad of the week is, one, he is clearly sexist in how he judges tennis matches. Because when you watch the way he's judging male tennis players at this same US Open and at other US Opens in history and other Grand Slams, he's not pulling this shit. And another reason he's a dickwad is that not only did he fuck over Serena, he also stole the victory from Naomi Osaka, because Naomi Osaka deserved to win. Again, I love Serena Williams, But Naomi Osaka is literally apologizing to the crowd and crying because she's won this match finally. And she won fair and square, even though you have this game penalty. And Serena Williams has to tell the crowd, stop booing Naomi because of like some bullshit thing Carlos played. She played better than me. Like she has to like just say like stay positive. And so like not only did Carlos Ramos rob Serena Williams, he also robbed Naomi Osaka of her moment. And that is why he's the dickwad. And I just, overall, this theme is just like how like white men or just men in general cannot accept female anger and specifically black female anger. And today there was a fucking cartoonist from Australia who portrayed Serena Williams as like a baby throwing a tantrum. And it literally is like the most cruel and racist caricature I've ever seen. And so like, that is why Carlos Ramos is a dickwad, because we are now realizing that people across the country cannot handle it when an African-American woman expresses her righteous anger at an unfair situation.
Right. And it's also like, look, this is a sport. This is serious. This is competitive. Like, people get angry. I've seen men throw tennis rackets and break things. I'm not a tennis fan, so I'm kind of making the lingo up as I go here. But I mean, I from what I understand, not as a tennis fan, but as a human fucking being, is that this was a totally normal kind of thing to happen. And it is because this country, this particular person has a problem with women, particularly black women, being great and being angry. And it just, you know, you have to apply the rules evenly. And that's honestly, at the very core, that is what a lot of equality work is about. It's about applying the rules evenly. It's not about not having rules. It's about if you have a rule, that it applies to everyone. And that's just never the fucking case. And it pissed me off because it just made it so fucking clear that that's just never the case.
Yes. And I also think it's like a problem within tennis that also has to be like, that also has to be dealt with. It also, I think, is an issue within tennis that has to be like really addressed, is like the way that they're dealing with like female players. Like, first we had the issue of like the French Open saying Serena can't wear her like cat suit, right? Even though it's like medically required. And then the US Open again, like last week, basically said, to this woman who was playing Cornet, they said she couldn't take off her shirt, even though she's wearing a sports bra underneath to change her shirt. And they fined her for taking off her shirt and changing her shirt. But then there have been men across the history of tennis that have taken off their shirts to change their sweaty clothes. Because I know you haven't seen Rafael Nadal play, but like maybe somebody in the audience has. He gets really fucking sweaty. And so he has like 3 to 4 shirt changes throughout the match, and he doesn't change it inside his locker room. He changes it out in public. And it's not as if like Cornet was like, free the nipple. She was wearing a sports bra. It's like there's no like, not just accommodation. There's no equal like, there's no equal application of the rules. And it just seems unfair. Right. And this is just the latest example of it. But it was particularly egregious because of the way Serena was treated during and like after, right? The questions that were asked of her, like people right when she lost, somebody asked, how are you going to explain route burst to your kid? And she was like, she took it as a joke, but still, like, when have you ever seen John McEnroe? Like, he was also a big tennis player who's now like a commentator who like used to get like super fucking angry on the court. You've never seen him asked, how are you going to explain your anger and outburst to your children? What the fuck? What the actual fuck? And so it's pathetic, and I fucking hate Carlos Ramos, and fuck the patriarchy, basically. Like, fuck it. Like, if you cannot handle a woman being angry, justifiably angry, I don't need your brand of feminism. I don't understand. Okay, Devin, what are some action items people can do after listening to the show?
Okay, so I talked about Cory Booker and my gratitude check. Look, Kavanaugh is a fucking problem, and no matter what my fucking family members say, if he is appointed, thank you, if he is appointed, Roe versus Wade is fucking over. So we need to keep calling, keep texting, keep making it very clear that Kavanaugh is an unacceptable choice for the Supreme Court. call your senator, get your friends to call their senators, and not just your Republican ones, but, you know, so things like what Cory Booker did are the norm, so that the Democratic senators know that is the kind of behavior that we want to see. It is of the utmost importance. There's also a huge pressure campaign on Susan Collins from Maine. If she votes for Kavanaugh, then there is a fundraiser that will give all of the money to her opponent. It is definitely worth giving $20 to, so we will link to that. But really, Kavanaugh needs to be our laser focus for the next...
Until the vote.
For the next couple of months, until the vote, really. And we also, you know, and I say that laser focus, but also, like, midterms are coming up. Please make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure your friends are registered to vote. Make sure your mother's registered to vote. Make sure you know who your local representatives are if they're up for office. It's really important to know. And if you do one thing today, it is just find out who your representatives are and if they're up for re-election.
Wink, wink, make a plan to crush the midterms.
Wink, wink, make a plan to crush the midterms. Crushthemidterms.org will help you with that. So, shameless plug. Otherwise, Varsha, that is it for us. Thank you all for listening and being so patient. Like I said, I had Rosh Hashanah services last night, and I have some sort of sickness that refuses to go away. I'm blaming my son because four-year-olds are disgusting disease carriers. So... until Thursday, we have a very special guest. We also have new episodes of Candidate and Crush the Midterm coming up on Tuesday. So be sure to listen, rate, review, and subscribe to those. In the meantime, Hellions, raise some hell and remember to practice some compassion.
Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian.
We get editing help from Andrew Walsh. And we, of course, take input from co-creator Sarah Lerner.
You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, DickwadsBegone, at facebook.com/groups/DickwadsBegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere. Hellbent Media is also producing 2 new shows. We've partnered with Crush the Midterms for Hellbent Presents Crush the Midterms, and we've partnered with Emily's List on Candidate, Real Conversations with Women Running for Office. Both shows are limited run series leading up to the midterms. Crush the Midterms is all about activism, getting involved, and talking to the people who know how to put your activism to work. And Candidate is all about talking to the amazing women who are running these campaigns and who have the passion and plan to change the world. Please check both out. Listen, rate, and subscribe on iTunes. It's still the rules of feminism. Thank you.